The Geekinator podcast episode number 24. QuickSurf Internet Media presents The Geekinator, talking about all things tech and geek. Hey everyone, how's it going? You are listening to The Geekinator. I'm your host, Adrian, coming to you almost live from a lovely Phoenix, Arizona, here in Studio BR2. If you have not already converted your podcatcher or feed reader over to the new podcast URL, please do so. Details and the podcast, the main podcast feed, are in the show notes for this episode. So please go to quicksurf.com and get everything switched over. Let's go ahead and talk about what's been going on since the last show. And I've actually got quite a bit of stuff from Engadget. Those of you who have Netflix accounts and you want to play Blu-ray players, well, there's a solution for you from LG. They're shipping on October 10th the BD300 Netflix / Blu-ray deck, and it's going to be $349. Not a bad deal, considering that just a couple months ago, most Blu-ray only players were $400 or more. So $349, you get a Blu-ray player and you get built-in Netflix. So very nice. If you're in the market for something like that, then by all means, go check it out. So how many of you have upgraded to iTunes 8.0? Well, I'm sorry to disappoint you, because there's now an iTunes 8.0.1 that has been released, and it fixes a couple of HDTV TV show issues, some Genius problems that has been going on. So go download the latest release if you're an iTunes user. Just a public service reminder. This next article that I've got, this one, it's kind of I agree with it totally. The name, it's from Michael Cannell. It's the Green Tech Media Blogs, and it's basically entitled "The Problem with LED Lightning or Lighting." Now, I'm a huge fan of alternative lights. In fact, here at my house, the only lights that are incandescent lights are currently the outdoor lights and the lights in the bathroom. And the outdoor lights are actually in the process of being changed out. I'm having an electrician redo some electrical work, and he's putting in all new floods, and it'll all be fluorescent floodlights. I in the bathroom, the only reason why it's not fluorescent lights, and it's actually little 7, 8, 10 watt screw-in incandescent bulbs, is because I tried running fluorescent lights there for a while, and apparently for some reason the steam from the showers and just in general, the bathroom tends to be a fairly wet environment in terms of the amount of water in the air. For whatever reason, the CFL lights, it may have been the brand that I had purchased, I don't know, but they like have no life there. It takes them, at first they work great, but after a month or so, you'll flip it on and it takes minutes for them to come up. And so, it really just boiled down to where it was like, okay, well, as much as it's a great idea, the incandescents don't act like that. I mean, it's pretty much, you turn it on, it's on. I mean, I'm okay with you turn it on, and it takes a couple of minutes to get to full brightness, but these things had trouble even coming up and emitting light at all. Really disconcerting. But anyway, that's a topic for another post. I'm not entirely sure if it's just because, that's where the shower is and they constantly get bathed in really wet, steamy air, or if it's some other issue with the wiring or what have you. But that's the only room in the house that does not have CFL lights. Now, I would love to go with LED lighting. I would love to, but there's a slight problem. They're way too expensive, and this article here points that out. In fact, there's a couple of pricing comparisons inside of here. Toshiba has it's mainly about Toshiba. They've released a couple of LED lights, and basically they've got two versions, a 60-watt equivalent version and a 100-watt equivalent version. The 60-watt equivalent version uses 7.8 watts. Okay, the 100-watt equivalent version consumes about 12 watts. However, you know, really nice lights. I mean, it'll light up a room. You turn it on, poof, it's like a 100-watt light bulb. One little catch. You thought CFLs were expensive at, you know, $5 or so per light or more, depending on what type you got and that sort of thing. These lights, the 60-watt equivalent costs $100. The 100-watt equivalent costs $150 in U.S. currency. Okay, $150. Ow! I just smacked myself in the head trying to fly away, wish away a fly. Okay, so $150. Amazing. They have a dimmable version of the 60-watt version, and it sells for almost $350. Insane. Now, a lot of this can be justified because, you know, an LED light lasts a lot longer than, say, for example, a CFL or even an incandescent. You know, an incandescent, you're looking at, you know, 700 hours maybe, or 1,000 hours, something along those lines. A CFL bulb, you can expect to get 5 years out of them or more. Okay. An LED bulb, it's not really a bulb, but an LED array type of light, an LED light, you can expect to generally get 10, 15 to 20 years or more out of them. And these are very conservative numbers. Okay, I mean, most LEDs, they're rated for a very long time. And so, you know, so it's kind of justifiable where the manufacturers, of course, obviously the prices are going to go down as they get more popular and the volume goes up and all that other stuff. But at some point, there's still going to be a premium over something like, you know, an incandescent bulb or even a CFL bulb because of the lifespan of the bulb. You know, it boils down to, look, you're buying a light that you're not going to replace for the next 20 years. You know, if we sold this at the same price that the incandescent bulb, we'd go out of business in 5 years simply because by then everybody would have replaced it, you know, with the better light. And then we wouldn't be selling any new lights for the next 20 years, and we would literally go out of business. So, you know, I don't think that LED bulbs are ever even going to get down to the CFL level in price, but they'll definitely come down more from where they are now. And that's really the problem with LED lighting, as Mr. Canellis points out here. The major issue with it is it's so honking expensive to buy up front. Your upfront costs are very, very high. Very low energy usage, but very high upfront energy costs. From the Washington Post, I've got a great little story. I've been kind of hoping Hollywood would do this for a while. And essentially, five Hollywood studios are agreeing to help pay for the $1 billion plus rollout of digital technology on about 20,000 movie screens in North America. This is pretty cool. You know, with the advent, hopefully this will make movies relatively less expensive. Not up front. It may not even make movies less expensive, but it'll curb the price hikes that you've been seeing on movies. Because what happens in a normal movie, like a modern movie that's being shot, like for example, Iron Man, that was just released on Blu-ray and DVD 2 days ago, a day or so ago. And I still have to pick that one up. But anyway, typically what happens is they shoot the movie. You know, they get all of their acquisition, all of their footage, everything that they're gonna use in the movie. That gets all captured on film. Typically something like a Super 35 or some other 35 millimeter format, but it all gets captured on film. And then they take that film, scan it all in to digital, okay? People go, oh my gosh, that's terrible, but it's actually pretty high resolution. That's what they call 2K digital, and essentially they're scanning it in, 2,048 pixels or so by, 1,500 pixels roughly. So, and they call that a 2K digital intermediate. There's also a 4K that's relatively common. So, you know, typically what they'll do is they'll scan the raw footage in at 2K or 4K resolution. 4K obviously is 4,096 pixels by 2 or 3,000 pixels, something along those lines. Pretty high resolution stuff. And so they take the raw footage that they've scanned in that they've shot on 35 millimeter film, and they scan that into a digital intermediate. So it's basically a high definition, super high definition actually, version of the film. And they use that to do all of the editing. Okay, so once it hits the DI, it's all digital from that point forward. All the editing, all the everything, the film is mastered digitally from that point forward. You know, greater than, I would say, 75% of all Hollywood films are done this way today. That's probably a conservative estimate. If you go to IMDb and look, the vast majority of new movies being released have a DI, and it's either 2K or 4K. Sometimes you'll see something a little higher resolution, like on The Dark Knight. A lot of it was actually shot on IMAX film, and when IMAX digitized it to get it back down to 2K, you know, it was basically those shots were scanned in at 8K resolution, which is insane. But it's a really big print, 65 millimeters or so, or maybe 75. I forget. I can't remember. But anyway, so they take all that and they do all the editing and they lock the picture, you know, and it's digital at that point. They have a film, full-length, feature-length film that's digital. Now what they do today for the vast majority of screens, because they only accept film, is they take that and print it back out to film. And then they take that film roll, the canister, or multiple canisters, and they distribute that out to the theaters. That's how it works today, for the most part. That's really expensive and wasteful, because for every movie, you have to do at least one print per theater. If the theater is showing it on three screens, you're doing three prints for that one theater. Okay, 20,000 some odd screens. Once that movie ends its run, what happens to that film? Well, it gets destroyed, you know, or, you know, gets thrown onto some archive or something. You know, it's hugely wasteful. You know, they do huge numbers of film celluloid, and it's incredibly wasteful. Well, what they're trying to do with this is say, okay, look, we have this. We shot all this on 35 millimeter film, or in some cases, if you have a digital camera, like the Red camera, or Sony makes one. There's a few cameras out there that shoot in high enough resolution that you can use for a movie. In those instances, many times. Or either way. Anyway, so it all ends up digital where they edit it, okay? So, you know, they're like, look, we already have it digitally here at the studio. What we want to be able to do is send it to you digitally and let you digitally project it. You know, let's cut the film out. And it's anywhere from $800 to $1,000 per print is what this costs the studios. in the theaters. You know, to get a print, it's $800 to $1,000 per print. And so, you know, it's very much in the interest just from, you know, A, sustainability, and B, costs, you know, to go and send that movie digitally to somebody. It's a hard drive and you get it back and it's totally reusable. And so, you know, it really, they're trying to incentivize it, and hopefully it works. I'm really looking forward to it. Now, the story here does say that they want it's mainly so they can do more 3D movies. If you ask me, that's a load of crap. I'll never go watch a 3D movie unless it's something that I really want to see. You know, but primarily 3D, no, just show me the movie. 3D to me is a gimmick. But anyway, that's a little primer on how they do the whole digital thing. I think it'd just be the best thing ever if they could do away with film in the theater. And basically, you're watching a pristine copy every time, and it's the resolution that they mastered it in at, you know, and you're seeing it there at the theater. That would be awesome. Of course, we'll see if that ever happens. From Earth to Tech at Earth, the number 2, and then tech.com. This is a GigaOm property. There's a story they have, waste management, which is a huge trash and garbage disposal company, is partnering to find gas in the trash. And the story points out there are 1,700 landfills in the U.S. And according to the EPA's Landfill Methane Outreach Program, they contain enough natural gas to produce 2,643 megawatts of electricity. 2,643 megawatts. That's pretty awesome. So, apparently, waste management is trying to get that gas and turn it into energy. Pretty nice. So we'll see how well that works out. We'll be, you know, following developments regarding that as things go on. But I thought I'd point it out. Okay, how many of you have big honking laptops that never leave your house? And you basically you don't want to buy a desktop because it takes up a lot of space, but you don't want a tiny little screen, so you buy like a 17-inch laptop, and all it does is sit around the house. You use it, you move it around the house. There's no one particular spot that, you know, you use it at. It's pretty much the house computer, but it's basically a desktop replacement class laptop with lots of power. You can play games on it and do all that other stuff. How many of you have one of those? Well, call in or email me and tell me about it. In the meantime, let me tell you about a new laptop that Hewlett-Packard is releasing. They've launched it. It's an 18-inch entertainment notebook. This is from Electronista over at electronista.com. Their newest notebook has an 18.4-inch LCD with a 16:9 native aspect ratio. You can buy it on the company's web store. You can get it all the way up to 2.8 gigahertz Core 2 Duo from Intel, or you can get a 2.53 gigahertz quad core. Phew! You can cram up to 4 gigs of RAM in the thing. It comes with 2 gigs standard. It has NVIDIA's GeForce 9600M GT video graphics with 512 megs of dedicated video memory, and it can natively display 1920 by 1080 HD video. Wow. Built-in Blu-ray drive and an optional HDTV tuner with remote control. HDMI output is included, so if you want to hook it up to your TV, you can. 4 USB ports. One of them doubles as an eSATA port, an express card slot, which is a huge deal for me. You know, 5-in-1 card media reader, FireWire port, 802.11n, You can get up to a 320 gig drive or get two 500s, or no, I'm sorry, two 320s for a total of 640 gigs. Totally awesome. Okay, this is not, I carry my notebook around with me everywhere. This is, I need a computer for the house, but I don't want to buy a big old honking clunky desktop. You know, I need something that I can, you know, sit in bed, you know, and read the news and surf the internet. Or if I need to do the bills, go throw it on the kitchen counter, the kitchen, or, you know, the dining room table, what have you. Do some serious work there. If I want to watch a movie, go throw it up on the dresser in my bedroom and watch a movie, 18-inch screen, you know, that sort of thing. Very nice. You can now get it. I know I'm totally shilling for Hewlett Packard Hill here, but I think it's the greatest thing ever. I've been an exclusive notebook user for years now, and my main system is a notebook, and it rarely leaves the house. I've got a 15-inch MacBook Pro now, but on the next one, when this gets old enough, this one's almost 2 years old. The next one, I'm thinking I'm just going to do a 17-inch because literally it never leaves the house, and I like having the added screen real estate. You know, big old honking screen. Love it. So anyway, that's the new notebook news. For those of you who are waiting for the Canon EOS 50D, it arrives October 5th, according to... According to Best Buy's inventory system, there's a picture of it, so be on the lookout for that. Kind of interesting. How many of you know who Kevin Mitnick is? Well, he has been detained. He was in Colombia for a while, and entering the U.S. again, the U.S. border... customs officials detained him. Well, of course they're going to, you know, he's an ex-con. But still very funny. There's the whole story's up on CNetNews.com. Very interesting story about his experience, and they give a whole rundown of what was happening. pretty cool. So check it out. I'm not going to go into too much detail. You know, I'll let the story speak for itself, but please do go check it out. I've got everything linked up in the show notes over at quicksurf.com. Okay, from the Technologizer, Harry McCracken's website, doing a great job. There's been some news this past week. Adobe has confirmed that they're working on a version of Flash for the iPhone. So for you iPhone users out there, great news. Couple of things. He's got a story here called Six Burning Questions About Flash on the iPhone. He wants to know how it would work. Bandwidth-wise, is it going to be a total drag? You know, what would be the deal with Flash video? There's a ton of Flash video out there. In fact, most of what's on YouTube is Flash video, and yet they have some native thing to display YouTube videos on the iPhone already. How usable is it going to be? See, now that's my big question. You know, if there's going to be Flash on an iPhone, I asked almost these exact same questions, which is why I'm linking to it and talking to it here on the show. You know, how's this going to work? Is it going to be a huge drag bandwidth-wise? Because 3G is already not that awesome, okay? How's it going to do video? I don't want to have to, I don't want to go to some site and the little video player pops in and, you know, suddenly I'm watching this tiny little microscopic video and it's all stuttery and everything because it's a huge resource hog, okay? How usable is it even going to be in general? That's the fourth question. Five, is Apple going to welcome Flash with open arms? Well, I hope so, because they're not going to do a version for themselves. And quite frankly, I'm sick and tired of running across websites that have Flash applets embedded, and I can't do anything about them when I'm on my iPhone. That's a total pain in the butt. And the sixth question is, would Apple actively prevent Flash from being available on the iPhone? Well, that's a concern. I'm concerned about that too. You know, Apple and Adobe, for the most part, generally go hand in hand. You know, Adobe applications tend to be relatively tailored to running on Macs. And, you know, Adobe and Apple both, you know, software suite-wise, Apple provides really great hardware. Adobe provides really great, you know, software. So it'll be interesting. Go check it out, the story, and we'll be seeing what happens with that. So how many of you like the Transformers movie? Well, there's a Transformers 2 coming out. And Gizmodo has a news story about it. It's going to be shot in the IMAX format, very much like how The Dark Knight was done. Very, very cool. So it's Transformers Revenge of the Fallen is the title of the next movie. It's being shot in IMAX, which means you're literally going to see five-story Transformers getting smashed, exploded, and all the usual Michael Bay craziness. And the only screen size truly worthy of Michael Bay, quoting Gizmodo here, like The Dark Knight, non-IMAX scenes will be letterboxed and it'll blow back up to the full screen for IMAX sequences. Yeah. So basically, The Dark Knight paved the way. Christopher Nolan proved that you could merge and marry the two of them together. And Transformers 2, they're going to do the same thing. It'll be awesome. I cannot wait to see the picture quality. How many of you are huge storage buffs? Now, I've linked in the past and talked about the problems I've been having with Seagate hard drives, and this is in no way saying that, you know, Seagate has been making an effort to make the situation right. So, no argument there. This is not a reflection of Seagate at all. But I ran across this story on Engadget, and Western Digital is releasing a 4 terabyte ShareSpace NAS. I'm totally drooling all over this thing. Now, what I'm wishing it would be, just from the features, is something that Seagate released with 1.5 terabytes in it. You can stick 4 SATA drives in this thing. So I want to see something similar to this, where you have 4 1.5 terabyte Seagate drives in that bad boy plugged into your network with an iTunes server and the whole tamale. That would be awesome. Unfortunately, Seagate doesn't make anything like that. The next best thing is this Western Digital 4 terabyte ShareSpace NAS that's just been released. It's not a Drobo, but it is network attached storage. Lots of it. It comes with 4 bays, gigabit Ethernet. You can do multiple RAID configurations, and it can act as an iTunes music server. $1,000. You know, what else can you ask for? Enough said. There's another story at Gizmodo I ran across where this guy takes a bunch of iPhone pictures and creates panoramas with them. Really cool. You got to check it out. He takes a bunch of pictures and merges them together and gets this really huge picture out of it. And it's pretty neat. Like I said, you really totally got to check it out. The pictures are pretty visually striking just in how they're done. You know, it's kind of like a collage, you know, but more integrated. Pretty cool stuff. So, if you want to know how he did it, you got to go read the story. From CNetNews.com. Okay, before we get into this next story, this week, the big news has been Real DVD from Real Networks. It's been released, and there's two things happening. Real DVD is suing the MPAA, and the MPAA is suing Real DVD simultaneously. Real DVD is suing to keep Real Networks is suing the MPAA to keep Real DVD from being having an injunction filed against it and basically being taken off the market. And the MPAA is saying, whoa, 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 this is crap. You can't do this. We're suing an injunction so that you have to take this off the market. Now, the funny thing is Real Networks beat them to the punch and filed their lawsuit first. So CNetNews.com, MPAA is to request an injunction against Real DVD. Before they even got to that, I've got another story on CNetNews.com's Crave website that Real has filed suit against Hollywood Studios to keep Real DVD alive. Huge stories. This has basically been what's been going on this week, and you should have seen the glut of stories about, you know, back and forth and the whole nine yards. Lots of coverage, so you've probably already heard it, but still, nonetheless, pretty cool stuff. CNetNews.com has a photo story, I guess you could call it, about 10 photos or so of how they did behind the scenes making the Iron Man movie. Pretty cool stuff. Definitely something you'll want to go step through if you enjoyed the movie. Gives you a lot of insight on how they did all the stuff behind the scenes to digitally composite the, you know, the Iron Man suit and all that into scenes. Pretty neat stuff. It's all a photo essay, I guess is what it's called. But still, pretty neat. In the bad news department, from Tech Dirt, the House is following the Senate, and the President is going to get a copyright czar. Yeah. The folks in the House spent some time easily passing the pro-IP bill that the Senate passed last week. President's got to, still has to sign it, but the entertainment industry is basically going to end up getting their own person in the White House. And his only job is going to be to prop up their business model. Holy cow. Huge setback. You can just see fair use going right out the door with this thing. That's all I have to say about it. It's going to go downhill from here. And how they managed such a coup, I have no idea. But it's just bad news. If you have anything you want to add about that, feel free. Always call me, 602-466-3134. Leave a message on the voicemail hotline. You can shoot me an email, geekinator@quicksurf.com. You can also just visit us on the web, quicksurf.com, and leave a comment in any one of the show notes, and it'll appear on the site shortly afterwards. But pretty interesting stuff. I want to hear what you have to say about it, so do let me know. All right, that will pretty much wrap it up for this edition of the Geekinator here on Techno Geekinerd. As always, everything we've talked about is linked up in the show notes. Just hit us up on the web, quicksurf.com. And you can also subscribe to the main podcast feed. You can subscribe to just the main Quicksurf feed, which has got a lot more content besides what's covered in the podcast. And you know, you can also download all of the MP3s for the show and all kinds of other stuff. So thanks so much for listening. And as always, I will talk with all of you on the next episode. Thanks, and I'll see you then. Bye-bye.